The Loose Cannons podcast is a free-form discussion about film that contains mature language,
such as poop and titty,
and descriptions of mature situations,
such as filing taxes and raising children.
We do not have any concern for spoilers, so if you haven't seen the film or films we are discussing and don't want to have the twists ruined for you, please watch the film before listening to the podcast.
Mais que ceci n'alla pas sans que ces plébéiens attribuassent aux exigences révolutionnaires de la bourgeoisie un sens qu'elles n'avaient pas. Poussasse l'égalité et la fraternité à des conséquences extrêmes qui mettaient le sens bourgeois de ces mots d'ordre totalement sur la tête, parce que ce sens mené à l'extrême, justement, basculait en son contraire.
Hey everyone, another Loose Cannons podcast coming at you. You and our listening audience know who that's for. Loose Cannons coming at you.
We're happy. Yay.
Yes, we've finally become an early morning radio podcast.
The morning zoo. Hey, we're playing all the hits.
Or we can just be really salacious and become like Howard Stern.
Ooh. Tell me how that movie makes you feel. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's that's hot. This is Ruben. Joining me, as per usual, Patrick, taking a sip of something.
Hey, it's wine.
I'm drinking Basil.
I'm drinking wine on this podcast.
Wine time. Basil.
And Ilya.
Hello.
Today we're going to be discussing 1982's Too Early, Too Late, directed by Jean-Marie Straub and Daniel Huillet, as the first in our first theme month of 2016. We're going to be discussing French female filmmakers in February. But before we do that, let's do this, a little segment we like to call Heralds and Announcements. Boop, 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 wow.
That was a good one.
Nice. Foghorn.
Yes.
Foghorn today.
That was unmistakable.
All right. I'm going to denounce a film also from the 80s. From the tail end of the 80s, a movie called Major League. This movie is pretty gross and full of, you know, men stalking women until they finally give in to them, and men hating women who are in power, and, you know, there's a lot of...
So what didn't you like about it?
What?
What was the thing you didn't like about it?
There's a lot of dumb sports stuff in it, too.
Still unclear about the thing you didn't like about it.
No, it's pretty bad, but I will say there are still a few small moments of comedy that I can totally attest to. Like, yeah, that stands the test of time, especially the guy
Pedro Serrano.
Well, I was gonna say the guy who's the announcer. And it is pretty funny.
Bob Uecker?
Yeah, he's pretty funny. but other than that, there's not a lot going on in this movie. Some of the characterizations are pretty racist, too. Especially the...
That's definitely true in the second one as well.
So, you know, that's there.
I'm very surprised that I've never seen that movie, because when I was a kid, Airplane and the Hot Shots movies were, like, my favorite movies.
Yep.
Yeah, it definitely seems to fall into that wheelhouse, although I would say that Airplane and the second Hot Shots movie are funnier than this one, definitely. So
that's fair.
I didn't see Major League as a child, but I did see Major League 2, and then when I watched Major League, I hated it as an adult, and I was like, well, I'll probably hate Major League 2 now as well. but then I watched it and I still kind of liked it. So I don't know if that's nostalgia or if it's a better movie, but there's a part where I think it's Dennis Haysbert plays the role of Pedro Serrano, at least in the second one, where like he hits a home run in the World Series and he's like, look at that scoreboard now, grasshopper. That's like one of my favorite moments in any movie.
That does sound funnier than most of the stuff that happens in the first one. I really just hated Tom Berenger's character in it. Like, he has the worst storyline. Yeah. And
he's not that great in the other one either, or in any movie that he's in.
Yeah, so...
Not even The Substitute?
Yeah, that's his clear best role.
And it's funny because I just watched A League of Their Own recently, and it felt like A League of Their Own was actively like a corrective to this type of movie, where it was like, hey, you know, like women aren't just, you know, objects to be pursued and people to hate when they're lauding over.
They can hit home runs and throw strikes too.
Exactly.
So yeah.
Exactly. They have their own stories, man. So yeah, it just struck me how much funnier and more awesome A League of Their Own was than this movie.
With you drinking wine, this is becoming more and more like a book club.
Yep. Makes me wish I had some wine.
I really love the use of metaphors.
Eventually, it's just going to turn into a discussion of our relationship.
Yep. Reminds me of that episode of JBU that they put out recently, where Allison was pretending she was divorced. Because she didn't want to get into a relationship and then become really divorced.
Yeah, she just wanted the benefits of being divorced. Right.
Who doesn't?
But then it turns around and the older woman was like, nobody even reads the book. We just come to hook up.
It's pretty funny.
And then she ends up hooking up with Gabby. It's pretty funny.
Nice.
Hilarious. Hilarious so comedy. Good.
Let's see how long we can talk during this part before we get to Bastards
of Inglorious Bastards. That's right.
We should discuss all of Too Early, Too Late, and then come back and finish
Harold's Indigenous. We just talk about a little bit of it and then just sit there and not talk for a long time.
Yeah.
Just show pictures.
Very apropos.
Pictures of the countryside.
I'm going to go ahead and Harold Dogtooth. Lanthimos film. I previously hadn't seen any of his movies, and The Lobster is finally coming out here in the States next month, so I'm super excited. Woo-hoo. So I figured I should watch Dogtooth in preparation, and I didn't realize
that was the same guy.
Yep, and it's good. It's it ties in nicely with this movie in that it has some sound design that is alternately super nice sounding and also oppressive at points, so it's a good tie-in, and it's like pretty darkly funny in ways that I think are pretty cool, and offers a nice commentary on like Greece's economic collapse, like in the process of it happening, and it's nice. It's a pretty upsetting movie, but in a cool way. I liked it.
Yeah, I remember liking it when I saw it too. I thought it was pretty funny.
Mm-hmm. I'm sad that he didn't call the new movie something like Lobster Claw in order to keep the animal part theme rolling.
Although his second movie is just called Alps, so he already kind of broke that.
The worst.
The worst mountain.
He has kept it.
He should have called it like Eagle Eye.
Should have called it Alps. It's just a bunch of people in Alf suits.
Eating cats. Yep.
I don't really have it. Yeah?
Oh, I was going to say, there is some cat murder in Dogtooth, so it would be a nice through line.
There certainly is.
There really is, yeah.
With a
also some tooth
garden shears,
some tooth murder also.
Some tooth mutilation.
Yeah,
just a lot of weird violence in general.
I watched I watched that movie at the Munich Film Fest, and I actually got to, so this was years ago, and I got to interview Lanthimos with a friend of mine, and he was pretty nice guy. He used to be he's like a theater director, and then like did a bunch of commercials in order to get enough money to actually finance that movie, and nice. Seemed like a pretty interesting, cool guy. We did it in a champagne room, which was...
Oh, I think I remember you telling me about that.
Yeah,
That's the place where no sex is allowed, right?
Exactly. Mm. That's... Chris Rock was there, too.
Yeah. And I just played that song the entire interview.
Yeah, exactly.
Just on a loop.
That was that. Yeah, so yeah, I don't have a herald or denouncement, so that was my addition to this part of our podcast.
Cool. Trying to stick with not talking about movies that I rewatched, I'll skip saying that talking about Black Cat or Collateral. I watched all of Michael Mann's movies, and two of the three that I rewatched ended up being my favorites. So instead, I'll denounce my least favorite of his movies, which is Last of the Mohicans, a movie that I found pretty boring to look at when apparently I don't enjoy Michael Mann shooting rural landscapes as much as I do urban landscapes. And there's a very myopic love story at the center of it that is never really critiqued on, even slightly. And what I was most reminded of was not the movie, but the book Twilight, which I also read. And I wondered if in 92, bros were talking as negatively about Last of the Mohicans as they talk about Twilight like 5 years ago, whenever it came out. Because it's totally the same thing, like played the same way. And like Daniel Day-Lewis is even like shot in like a similar way to Robert Pattinson.
Nice.
So I did not like that movie hardly at all.
Mm.
The performance of the bad guy, I guess you would call him. I think his name was Magua.
Isn't it Wes Studi?
It's pretty decent. Yeah. Was above average, but for the most part, I didn't like any part of that movie.
I can see that. It's been a long time since I've seen that movie.
Been a long time.
It's been a while.
Yeah, I've never seen it, and I was sort of excited to until now.
Sorry.
Oh, I don't care.
Maybe you'll really like it.
Yep.
Maybe it's the Chirac of 1992.
Yeah, it could be.
Speaking of 19 or years that ended too.
Oh man,
this was Ilya's pick. So do you want to give us a description, not of the plot since this is a documentary?
Yeah, I mean
of the
things that happen
movie.
Yes.
Yeah. Of the mise-en-scene.
Yeah.
Yeah, describe each shot in detail and we'll...
Yeah, I will attempt to do that. I mean, I'm actually gonna use a thing that Rosenbaum kind of wrote on it to help me describe this.
Plagiarize.
Yeah, totally. We'll do. So, the movie is divided into two parts. The first part shows a series of locations in contemporary France. And it's accompanied by Daniel Huyer reading part of a letter that apparently Friedrich Engels wrote to Karl Kautsky describing the impoverished state of French peasants, and excerpts from the notebooks of grievances compiled in 1789 by the village mayors of those same locales that are shown on screen in response to plans for further taxation. And the second section, that's about twice as long, does the same thing with a Marxist text by Mahmoud Hussein about Egyptian peasants' resistance to English occupation, prior to a revolution that happened in the city of Neguib in 1952. And yeah, I guess the movie is full of long takes of landscapes accompanied by voiceover of those two texts. The second text is read aloud by a different person, and I think I don't have the name right now.
Oh, I thought it was Straub.
No.
Yeah, I thought Wee read the first part and Straub.
I don't think it was Straub. It was another guy that read it.
One of the other billions of
Yes.
Men.
Yep. You know. One of those other guys. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't Straub because I read someone say that.
Was it the same guy who did L.A. Place Itself?
Yeah, it was not Tom Anderson.
Whenever a director doesn't want to read for their own movie, it's always this one guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But
or maybe it was the dude who does all of Chris Marker's movies.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't read his own either.
Yeah, the second guy's name is...
People are the worst.
Bagat El Nadi. That's the guy who reads the second one. Yeah, so that describes the movie, I think.
It does.
Yeah, it for sure does. I like this movie. I think I would have liked it more if I wasn't having a headache and watching it under somewhat duress. Right. I feel like I couldn't give the movie the attention and sort of time to breathe that it demands, but yeah, I thought a lot of the shots were pretty engaging and that it does some interesting stuff with film form in terms of, like, I guess what a shot is supposed to be filled with in order to be in a film and, like, what a shot is not filled with. And this, like, you know, you expect to see a lot of people, and for like the first almost hour or 30 minutes of this movie, for the only people you see are encased in cars and trains. Like, so people exist, but they're just not people. And then, like, later when people appear, there's a lot of times where they're just like talking over them. So, like, there are people talking in the background, and then someone is talking over the people are talking, and I thought a lot of that stuff was pretty well done.
I did not like this movie. It felt a little like history class to me. It felt like somebody was just sort of droning at me. I didn't like the format of it. I probably could get into the subject matter a little more if it had been presented in a different way, but the way that it's presented just never drew me in, and it never really, I don't know, it never really engaged me in a way where I was, like, truly interested in what it was what it had to say about its subjects. And I even, like, couldn't really get into, like, just thinking about the format and why, you know, the deliberate style of why it was formed that way or why it was showing me the images it was showing me. I just couldn't really pay attention to it. I don't know. I guess that's my ADD. Like, I can't sit and just watch nothing for a long time like that. But yeah, when it felt,
I blame
capitalism
nice for that.
Well, yeah, I guess so. It felt kind of nice at first, like the beginning, where it would show you an image and then they would speak over it and kind of comment on kind of what you were seeing, I guess. Or why you were seeing what you were seeing. But then I guess it's more in the second half of the film where it starts, where it will do that, and then it will just hang on a shot for like a really long time. Like, it shows the footage of people like milling about in that one little area for so long. And I was just like, when is this gonna end? Like, I just couldn't wait for it to be over. And it just took me out of the headspace of, like, I don't know, trying to break it down or anything like that. I just got really bored with it.
I agree with Ruben. I like this movie. And I feel that if... also, watching it under duress, because I forgot what time we were supposed to do this podcast. So, was like, oh shit, I gotta start this movie. And then I felt like I couldn't really pause it, because every time I paused it, it would be prolonging how late I was gonna be to this podcast. So I feel similarly that there's something sort of nice about its detachment to me. I felt like a movie about like revolution, especially like a documentary about both like post-revolution poverty and like pre-revolution oppression could be really sentimental and really try and like get at like specific people or specific stories in the way that the movie was sort of detached, like, and kind of refusing to sentimentalize it, I sort of really liked. And I liked the sound a lot. I guess it's all direct sound, but there's something about it that seems so, like, sometimes really weird and off-putting, and other times just, like, really nice. There's an early shot in France where it's just, like, a static shot of a farm, and there's, like, a tree in the background just kind of blowing in the wind. And there's just, like, bird sounds. And I was like, this shot feels like a hug. Like, I could just watch this forever. This feels nice. But
yeah. I mean, I like this movie. And I think it made me very aware that I'm often enough, unfortunately, in a situation where I kind of do not respond well to anything that is not presented in a easily digestible format in movies. It's always interesting when a movie kind of really knocks you on the head and makes you realize that how that you kind of like things being prepackaged. Like, I apparently really need that. And this movie had none of that at all. It yep. lingered on stuff that no movie ever lingers on. It presents itself in, like, the least, obviously, like, in quotations, cinematic kind of way, where things just, like, are happening, and there's, like, no, like, dynamics, especially pushing things forward or anything like that. And you're just, like, you know, you're just kind of sort of left with what's on screen and you kind of thinking about what's on screen, and that can feel like lonely and a little bit scary. And I thought like that in terms of that, the movie succeeded really well in making me aware of how I watch movies and what I expect from them. And I mean, I think in terms of what like the movie's like the two texts that it was reading about, I thought it kind of made it interesting. Like, I think also I read a thing about by Rosenbaum where he got about this also, where like, so this movie does not really have a plot, and so sort of by nature, a lot of the way it shows just shows you pictures of nature, but like you're not really sure what exactly is happening, like why it's showing you these pictures, that a lot of Western viewers will automatically say like, huh, is this like religious or something? Because like it's it's lacking like some clear like motivation why you're seeing this. And like if it's without like plot and so on and so forth, you're often like think, oh, this is like mysticism or something or whatever. But like the texts are both like Marxist texts. So it's like about as far from religion as you can get. And so I thought it's interesting that like it showed like, I don't know, like Marxist spirituality or whatever, which I thought was like an interesting idea to show.
Of the three members, the four members of Loose Cannons, three people liked the movie and one person did not like the movie. That's my impersonation of the when they're just listing how many people were poor it's in true. Each village.
This is a place where poor people are. It was really sad. I was like, holy shit. It was like something like some small parish with like 553 people. Because originally, in order to vote after the revolution, you had to have like a certain amount of earnings or whatever to be an active citizen.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, yeah. out of 553 people, only 7 had enough money to be considered, like, actual voting citizens in post-revolution France. It's pretty brutal.
Yeah.
It's true in America, too. People think that, like, oh, when the American Revolution happened, then at least all white men got the right to vote. Not even that. You had to be a landowner as well, which was like 3% of the population.
Yeah. Thanks to Adam Ruins Everything for that information. That's where I got it from.
Yeah, England started out the same way too.
Yeah, but that was like, in people's minds, that's what they think the American Revolution was about. Is that they're like, we wanted to give freedom to all these people, but really, America was just Little Britain.
Yep.
They're like, we don't want to be taxed by Britain and America, so we're just going to start our own country.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's interesting that this movie kind of tackles the sort of weird romantic idea of revolution being automatically tied to an oppressed people rising above and then, like, sort of, like, after that, their situation becoming better, whereas this is just like super brutal when it comes to that idea. It's like, nope. the bourgeoisie used the poor to make this happen and then fucked them over just the same, like as soon as they were done. Like, and I think that that's like as simple as that with what I just said is an oversimplification, of course, of what happened and what is presented in the movie. I think just thinking about that, even in those simple terms, already kind of demystifies the idea of revolution as something inherently like forward and progressive.
Yeah, and I feel like the sort of bored sounding text sort of also functions to like de-romanticize like pastoral photography, like that's like, here's this beautiful French landscape and 200 years ago almost everyone who lived here was poor and oppressed.
Yeah,
and things haven't changed that much. Also, I feel like no one is, I mean, maybe people will get this reference, but the movie actually reminded me a lot of Laura Mulvey's movie Riddles of the Sphinx, which is a pretty fun movie. I mean, in the way that this movie is fun, I guess.
Super fun.
It's like her attempt to like make an anti-male gaze movie, so it's a lot of shots, well, of her reading, like, text, and it's just, like, her sitting at a desk, very plainly reading, and then it'll intercut that with, like, long 360-degree pans while this, like, synth score plays that's, like, very alienating. Like, it's, like, regular urban places. There's, like, a playground and stuff, but there's never any people very close to the camera, and actually, like, while I was watching it, I was, like, oh, this movie is like, if I really liked It Follows, it's like the same thing. It's just like really unsettling urban shots with like synth music. And so I was like, hey, Laura Mulvey did this in the 70s. It's pretty cool. But anyway, the sort of way that the camera pans and like is sometimes kind of nice, but then also kind of alienating reminded me of Riddles of the Sphinx, which had just come out like a few years before that, so I wouldn't be surprised if there was some kind of influential connection. So that's my way of heralding Riddles of the Sphinx in the middle of this
nice
podcast.
Nice cool one.
And I also laughed really hard at one shot when like cows appeared out of nowhere.
Oh yeah,
I was, like, panning. And
I did think, I did think the cows. Right, yeah, I did think the cows were funny. I was like, hey, check these cows out.
When you when you said something was a reference, I thought you were going to talk about the shot that Patrick talked about earlier, which is the people exiting the factory.
Oh yeah, I was gonna. I totally wrote that down
that's
too. Right.
That's the Lumiere brothers, yeah. Isn't it?
It's, yeah, mm-hmm. Reclaiming
for
it.
Sure is, and it's yep, it's reclaiming it for non-white people.
And for the factory workers, as opposed to Lumiere just making his employees come out of the factory over and over again.
So he can like a dick. Right. Yeah.
Just a bunch of
you can tell, unlike them, that they're less comfortable with it than the people who have practiced coming out over and over again, because they keep like staring at the camera.
Yeah, they do. Walking by and just looking right at it. Pretty cool. One thing I was gonna ask if anyone had any kind of ideas about. I read the Rosenbaum thing that Ilya did too.
Me
and
too.
He doesn't fully talk about it, but like I was sort of like part of me was wondering why France and Egypt specifically, other than they like these two texts and talk about them, like that. I mean, because obviously there are also like a lot of places in Africa that were colonized by France as opposed to Britain, but I don't know. Mm. I mean, I guess the essay is about Egypt, but.
Yeah,
I'm sure there's also been
maybe
writing.
They felt if they had gone to a place colonized by France that they would just be further taking advantage of their own colonialism. Whereas going to a place colonized by Britain, like at least they weren't the bad guys there.
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Yeah,
well, or maybe it may have been like reiterating some things though if they went to a place colonized by France, because they're already talking about how I guess sort of the French system was oppressing people, and I guess talking about how some other country's system was oppressing people is like varying it up, like changing it up a little bit, kind of saying like this isn't just a French problem, it's a problem everywhere in the world.
Mm-hmm. They also have that line that says that the idea that Egypt supports its own oppression is a myth propagated by colonialism. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's why they found that country more interesting, is that it's a country that's, I guess because of its like history with like pharaohs and whatnot, is romanticized as a place of like kings and subjects.
Yeah, sort of like that gross pseudoscience monologue that Leonardo DiCaprio has in Django. He's like talking about skulls and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is extremely like Django Unchained.
Yep. Yeah.
I like the part at the end when they murder all the British people.
I was going to say, I like the part when the donkey explodes.
I like the part where the guy dances, like gets on the cow, and then they dance into the sunset.
No. So yeah, when you said that these are shots that other people don't shoot, I was gonna say except for the donkey, because there's a whole movie of a donkey just walking places called "Oh Hazard."
Oh yeah, yeah.
Just walking around in circles. There's one long shot where a donkey is doing work by just pulling some like lever around in circles.
Yeah. Oh,
it's like a mill or something. Uh-huh. And it's just, you know, like a 3-minute shot of just a donkey walking around in circles.
Yep. That donkey is going places.
Up and coming superstar.
Yeah, I was wondering about that connection too. And I'm actually not sure there is much of a political connection as much as there is like an aesthetic connection. I don't know, like if there like there is a much there would be much more obvious like choices if you wanted to trace a path between like French colonialism and African countries, and it wouldn't necessarily mm-hmm. be Egypt, nor would it be that particular revolution. I mean, I haven't read too much about like Straub and Huyer's biography or like what they were like, you know, what, there might have been some biographical things maybe also involved in here. Maybe they went to Egypt and they shot stuff there and then they had this idea. But it seems to me like they were mostly interested in like contrasts here between like rural French countryside, like idyllic, weird French, weird like Western idyllic imagery, and like imagery that is usually like reserved for like anthropological movies or whatever. Like whenever there's a movie about Africa made by whites, it's mostly about like, oh, look at how those people live and blah blah. And let's look at this super critically and pretend we're not here. And like, you know, and I feel like there was maybe an idea behind that where like what would be interesting to show these places without this kind of clear anthropological like idea behind it and contrast them with these, with this idyllic romanticized imagery of France.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I guess technically they are in Africa in this movie, because Egypt is Africa.
No, yeah. I mean, I'm saying there would be much more obvious other African countries where, like, French colonialist.
Senegal
would be more obvious. Morocco. Yeah.
Like Algeria, mm-hmm. yeah. Or something like that, yeah. It's true. It's true. Both England France did colonize a lot of Africa.
Yeah. They sure tried.
Yeah, they do mention Napoleon as a connecting thing.
Yes, that one, definitely.
Good old...
This one shot, I don't know where it was in Egypt, but it's like, I guess like some, maybe government housing, like these big apartment buildings, but they're like at the very edge of the city. So it's like these big buildings that obviously like a lot of people live in, and then just like desert to the left of the screen. It's like, here doth civilization end. And I don't know, I feel like maybe like it's in comparison to when they're in France, where it's like city and then rural, or like you're looking at there's like a shot where it's like a field in the front, and then sort of in the deep background you can like see a church and some houses and stuff like mm-hmm. that. Mm-hmm. That this is like, I don't know, they're like right up against each other in a way that they aren't in France, like civilization and not civilization. Also, I don't know what those people were doing, but they were whistling a lot in that one scene.
I like that their weird commitment to like direct sound and not messing with it includes like that one part when a plane that you can't see clearly flies overhead and the sound gets really distorted because it's like too loud for whatever they were anticipating with the microphone.
Yeah, that that is the bane of sound men, is airplanes. or any sort of aircraft, because they're so loud. Aircraft and leaf blowers.
Oh man, I bet.
Goddamn leaf gas leaf blowers. The worst.
I really like, I think my favorite part of the movie was the very first part, just the endless circling around driving, and yeah. like how it was like really beautiful but also like so droning at the same time, especially when combined with the text, where it was just like I couldn't take it anymore.
For a little while I was like, oh man, I sort of hope that like the whole movie is just one shot for like 100 minutes.
I thought that it might be somewhere around like minute 3. I was like, oh, this is just it.
Yeah.
I've seen another one of their movies, but I don't even remember which one.
What if this was like...
I don't think I would have been ready for it at 24 or whenever I watched it.
What if this was like Kiarostami's 10, but with the camera placed outside of the car and the car just going in circles so you wouldn't even hear any of the conversations inside of the car?
That That'd be pretty amazing in a way to like drive around a roundabout without ever leaving it for like 100 minutes. Just like
that's pretty intense, yeah. Especially
an hour and a half of
actually doing that, yeah, and not like crashing your car into something.
Yeah, I was kind of wondering. Like to me, I started, you know, because it's hard to with a film like this sometimes concentrate just on what's going on in the film because they're not filling up everything with like something to engage you with. That I was thinking about like them driving around, like how did they do this? Like this is kind of actually like a risky maneuver when you don't have like a bunch of PAs and stuff like to block off the road and have your own fake cars. If they're just like, we're just gonna drive around in circles for like 9 minutes while we film this.
Yeah,
like,
and there were a lot of cars that like came cars up super close to them too. Like I was constantly thinking like, damn, this was like almost a collision like just now. This is really weird. I was also thinking about that a lot.
Scooter was waving at the camera for a second. He's like, eh. It's true. Especially because it's not like, I mean, the 16mm camera is kind of small, but it's not that small. Like, it's not like a, you know, video or whatever, like a handheld camera. So,
yeah, I it's probably fair to point out that they could not have done 100 minutes of footage with a film camera.
Yeah.
Because I think the limitation is something like 11 minutes or something like that. And then you run out of film.
Because of the quality and the time period, I was like, maybe it could be, because video definitely existed at this point, so
I guess so. Yeah, but
if they got like 4 cameras though, and then like they finish one, they'd start reloading the other. Like they just hand it over, and then like cut on the handing, and they just go around in circles.
That'd make it even more dangerous. Passing around a bunch of like film shit in the car while driving. I like the speculation. We should make this movie now.
Yep.
It's too bad the U.S. doesn't have any roundabouts that are like this, really.
Not like that, yeah. But I know there definitely are some. Like, I know there's one in Ohio, near where my sister lives, because we drove through it many times while I was there.
Nice.
Yeah, there are small ones in Birmingham, not big ones.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge one. This is one of the famous big ones in Paris, though. There's not a lot of those in Paris, either. There's like maybe one or two that are that huge and also in the center of the city.
Yeah. I think that by the time it came to America, they realized that that's like a really unsafe way to build roads.
Nah, we're not going to do that. Also, those roads were probably built when they were like carriages and...
That's true.
Mostly people like walking and stuff like that, so... Probably much safer than
Americans thought they should regulate all those roads more as opposed to their free market. Should regulate traffic way more.
I remember reading a pretty funny thing about, this is totally tangential, but
that's cool.
in the very early days of automobiles, like they were really demonized in the media in the U.S., like in New York. I saw a picture, it was pretty great. It was like a newspaper article with like an artist rendition, and like it's like the front of a car, but it looks like a big demon about to like run people over. And the article is all about how like we need to like stop cars from being on the roads because they're too dangerous. They keep murdering people, and it's like these rich money bags are just killing our citizens and with their horrible...
There's an episode of Adam Ruins Everything about that as well.
Yes, there is. Yeah.
Pretty sweet.
Yeah, there was
the car company's response to it was to invent a slur to call people who got hit in the road.
Yeah, they called them jaywalkers. Yeah.
So,
this story.
To completely turn the advertising around and, help win the roads for cars.
They instead of telling police officers to like give people tickets for it or whatever, they told them to just like yell at them and call them jaywalkers in front of people. and just
publicly shame them.
Yeah, just embarrass them instead of actually like enforcing the law.
That reminds me of that Hannibal Buress bit about jaywalking. It's really good.
My bad. I love jaywalking. My bad. That's it, right? We're done. That's not a crime. Like three people in this high profile jaywalking case.
My favorite part is when he says, "I love jaywalking and do it all the time." It's a great way to be a pedestrian.
That the part where he's like, "Me and this old lady were jaywalking together." He's like, "We weren't together, but what if we were? So what?" Mind your own business.
Really got off the rails, but
oh man, jaywalking is made up.
I mean, I feel like even Jonathan Rosenbaum in his writing on it is like, this is a movie that I love and is also extremely hard for me to write about. And I feel like if Jonathan Rosenbaum can't do it, yeah, it's okay that we're not the best at it either.
Yeah, earlier there was a pause and I thought we were all going to not talk for like a minute.
That'd be nice.
In honor of the film.
Yeah, if we had some bird sounds, that would be nice. Those bird sounds.
I certainly have some in my sound library. I'll pull some out.
Cool, do it.
That's not like the movie, though. You can't add it in post.
That's true.
It has to be, it has to be live. Yeah.
That's true.
Live birds.
I guess if you were going to add them in post, it should have been on the Destroy She Said podcast.
Clearly
added in post.
Yeah.
And this movie reminded me of that movie. Another one.
It sure did. I was watching and I was like, when I was watching this movie, I was like, this is a Destroy She Said that I liked, but I bet Patrick still doesn't like it.
You were right.
Proven correct.
I guess I'm the opposite of Jonathan Rosenbaum in that, or not totally the opposite in that.
Except you have the exact same taste, apparently.
I was going to say, I don't like this
movie. Except for this movie.
I also find it hard to talk about.
But I like the way that like cars and trains are used in this, and like how they always feel slightly alien, like this weird thing in this space. Like you're looking, I don't know. I guess at a rural landscape, and there's like a car or a train going by, and that how different it feels from say a cart being pulled by a donkey.
Mm-hmm.
How they film it and how they do that is impressive, I think.
I was gonna say
the fact that it's was filmed in 82 actually only adds to it, because a lot of those models of cars seem additionally alien by being so just weird looking.
Not to me. I love that style of car, and I'm sad that everything is like this weird rounded car 2.0 thing.
Absolutely.
That they are now. Whenever I'm on the road and I see like a truly, scare quotes, ugly car, I always really excited, like something without glossy paint or like an old truck or something like that. I'm like, that's when cars looked cool, as opposed to now they all look like a pill capsule.
Yeah, but you would probably...
Betsy agrees with you.
Yeah.
She bought like a weird boxy car when her other car got stolen. It's like a 90s brown box of a car.
Yeah, I feel like those cars are pretty cool as well. But the fact that they're not on the street a lot as much as they were maybe at the time kind of makes them additionally seem a little alien. So
to you, maybe.
I hate cars.
Don't speak.
I am anti-car.
Experience. I was just going to say that they do a similar thing sometimes with... that they did with the cows, where you're not expecting to see a car and suddenly it pans and then there's a car, and every time it was very jarring. So or the train thing, I agree, it's pretty cool.
The train was very surprising, because like I had almost forgotten the trains existed by that point.
And there it is.
It's just like, yeah, and it's like, oh yeah, the entire earth is just like windswept plains. One thing that I read in the Rosenbaum piece that I did not agree with is that they said that they were trying to imitate wind with the way that they moved the camera in this. I did not feel like this movie felt very windy.
Yeah, especially the way that the pans sometimes like slingshot and just go back and forth. I was like, that's not really how wind works. Maybe on like a really intense windy day, but usually it's just kind of blowing in vaguely the same direction.
When I read that, I thought about the movie Rain and how I thought that that movie actually did a pretty good job of looking like rain, and how I wanted to make a movie about wind in college, and yeah, I just was not a good enough cinematographer to know how to do it.
Yeah. Neither is Paul Reiser.
Did he make a movie about wind too?
No, there's a episode of Mad About You, is that the show that he's on?
Mm-hmm.
With Yoko Ono, where she wants him to make a video of the wind, and he spends the whole episode really stressing out about how to try to film the wind or create a wind-like effect, and he can't do it. And then at the very end, he finally tells her, and he's really worried, and she's like, oh, it's just an idea. You can try something else.
That sounds like Yoko Ono.
It's true.
She's pretty cool.
But he's like all scared of her the whole episode because she's like Yoko Ono, and he has the impression that she's like a super intense artist and he can't let her down. And she's like, yeah, I mean, it's just an idea.
And Paul Reiser is getting a lot of action on this podcast. Like,
that's true.
A lot of mentions.
I guess we should all watch Twice. Aliens next. That should be our next French filmmaking.
We had a chance to watch Aliens, but some idiot vetoed it.
Yeah.
Wait. When was this?
We were going to watch an 80s action movie.
Yep.
And one of the options was Aliens.
Yep, sure was.
Some jerk blackballed it.
Sure did.
And so we watched Escape from New York, one of our lost podcasts, instead.
Yeah.
It's true. So we would have lost Aliens.
Who knows? Maybe if...
I bet it probably...
It hadn't been blackballed.
Yeah, butterfly
it just
effect.
Wouldn't have been a problem.
I bet it probably wouldn't have won the vote.
Maybe we'd all be famous now if someone hadn't blackballed Aliens. That would have been the podcast that broke us through.
Just for the record, I can't remember who you're talking about. Like, who blackballed it?
Ruben.
You're talking about yourself?
Me. Yes.
Ruben did. Yeah.
I couldn't remember. I was like, did I?
Some play? Jerk.
Who is he talking about? Who is this bit about, anyway?
Who is me? I had just watched it in the last year. So.
Well, yeah. Maybe in a year or two, I'll put it on one of my lists, and maybe it'll get through, and then we'll
you
get our
should
fame.
Do it with someone else. Yeah. Michael Goddamn or someone.
Or Mitchell. I bet Mitchell's a big James Cameron fan.
Yeah.
That sounds like Mitchell. Xavier Dolan, Alex Ross Perry, and James Cameron.
The trifecta.
Walk into a bar.
I would watch a documentary about the three of them hanging out.
James Cameron would just want to paint them nude.
Tim.
It's the biggest, most expensive bar you've ever seen.
And then the narrator comes on and says a bunch of really critical stuff about them. And then Lana Del Rey plays as they all run away.
There's a reference briefly in the text that they read to the French commune thing that fell apart, and that made me want to watch that.
La Commune?
La Commune.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought maybe you were going to say Sweet Movie, because part of that movie takes place in a commune.
Yeah, nice. And it's also very Marxist.
I
did want
to say Sweet Movie. Mm-hmm.
Sexy Marxist movie.
But a lot better chance that Patrick would enjoy that movie, because it's, I guess, a lot more going on.
Yeah, dirty sex,
When I think about communes, I think more about a spell to ward off the darkness, which I know you also watched recently, Ruben.
I did watch it. It was okay.
I enjoyed that movie a lot more than this one, though.
This movie didn't have any communes in it.
It's true. Zero communes in this movie.
Another thing that I liked, and I'm guessing, again, that Patrick didn't feel this way, but after, like, all of the footage leading up to it, when it suddenly cut to the historical footage, was kind of, like, shocked me out of my seat, like, for a moment. I was like, oh, I didn't expect this, like, at all to happen.
Yeah, I did have that same reaction, too, actually, though. I was like, oh, here we go, archival footage. I was waiting for something like this. And then it's a little too brief. It's just a brief little flurry of archival footage, and then it's over.
I was going to say that maybe part of the reason why I like this is when Patrick likened it to history class, I was like, oh man, I really like history class. Wish would I could go back to school and just take history classes all the time.
Would you say that history is not people getting swept up, but just individuals making choices?
I sure would.
Sounds like something you would say.
When I'm trying to seduce Sarah Michelle Gellar.
For one night only?
Yep.
Is that like, that? Really, that's like a quote from Buffy or Angel?
Buffy.
Yeah, it's Parker. Classic Parker.
Paraphrase.
Right. Oh, he's the douchey guy she meets in college, right?
Oh, yep. Man.
With the big eyebrows.
Gross.
I really like the final shot of this movie. There is something very evocative about the two towers and then panning down to the, like, kind of grimy reflection in the
water,
the wavy water.
Yeah, although we should clarify, in case someone hasn't seen the movie, it's not the two towers that people usually think of. It's just the towers in Egypt.
It's the Lord of the Rings two towers.
Well, I thought you meant the World Trade Center. That's what I thought he meant,
but I thought this would be funnier.
That's a better joke.
The World Trade Center was built at that point, and I feel like the way that it's shot is actually supposed to be evocative of it.
Nice.
But maybe I just feel that because I'm an American and I tie everything back to my American experience.
Very fair. It also made me think of, what's it? Oh, in the Tom Anderson movie, there's some shots from a Godard movie, and I'm not sure exactly which one, where he shoots the ocean. And I was like, I don't know if I've ever seen a shot of the ocean that looked this beautiful. I want to see this movie, but I still don't know what it is. But I don't know.
Which movie? The most recent one?
What?
The most recent one?
The Thoughts That Once We Had, the one that was on my top 10.
Yeah.
But I don't know which Godard. The one
that no one else of us are ever going to get to see.
It's true.
It's never going to be released.
Yep. I guess Patrick could have a good chance at seeing it since he lives in L.A.
Yeah, it might come here.
Has those Hollywood connections.
I mean, it already premiered there,
but
there's a good chance that it could play again, but almost nowhere else.
They might show it at the Cine Family or something.
Yeah, that would not surprise me.
They re-release older movies sometimes.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, I got to find out what that Godard movie is, because I was like, wow. This is the best shot of the ocean that I've ever seen. And I don't know.
I feel that way about Point Break.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My favorite shots of water.
It's true. That's definitely one of the, like, many reasons that I love that movie. That ocean photography.
Yep.
And, oh, man.
I also like its Marxist leanings.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's overt Marxist leanings.
Yeah.
Sweet, sweet.
And the way how it makes cars seem alien.
And all the cows and donkeys.
Yeah, but yeah. Well, I was gonna say like the surfboards are like the carriages in this movie. They seem like more natural and like part of the environment, and then the cars are very alien.
I like that
surfboard. Yeah.
Which do a double feature of this movie and Point Break at the somewhere here in Portland. I'm going to recommend it to one of the rough houses. Be like, hey guys, I got a great idea for a double feature.
Oh boy. They'll love that.
Yep. Show them this movie first.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You got to start with this one.
Yeah.
Do you still read Marxist literature? Every day! I don't have any more notes on this movie.
Yeah.
The only other note that I have is I wrote down the line, perpetually in danger of pauperization. And I thought that pauperization was a very funny word.
Look how many...
That's the process of becoming like John Popper, lead singer of the Blues Traveler. Speaking really fast and playing the harmonica.
Just a big fat guy with a bandolier of harmonicas.
Yeah, and he can only speak either like in rhymes or like really quickly.
I think pauperization.
What did you say?
The immediate
he's
after
becoming
effects.
Pauperized.
It's the immediate after effect of gentrification. It's just you see everyone after a whole quarter of a town has been gentrified suddenly running around with harmonicas playing in blues bands.
Rin-tin-tin.
And rich people being really smug just be like, ha, you just got pauperized.
And we're just playing each other off with harmonicas.
If y'all haven't seen the lip sync battle with Emma Stone and Jimmy Fallon, where she does that famous Blues Traveler song, you should, because it's the best.
You're talking about Hook?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, right. Yeah,
yep.
That's pretty cool.
That one.
She does that song. And she does it really, really well.
She's pretty,
pretty
cool.
Amazing.
Give us money, NBC.
Yep. We're plugging your shit.
NBC.
Yeah, and Laura Mulvey. Give me some money, Mulvey.
Fork it over, Mulvey.
Well, if we're doing that, then I'm going to have to pay money to Michael Mann.
That's true.
I denounced his film. But I liked all of the other ones except for Public Enemies. But every single other Michael Mann film, including his TV movies that no one else likes, I gave 3 stars or more to. I liked LA Takedown and Jericho Mile. Mm.
I'll have to see Enemies again.
Did he film Crime Story or was that Ferrara?
That was Ferrara.
Ferrara, yeah. Right.
He did the very first episode of Luck, though, which I watched. It's on Amazon Prime.
Yes.
He also did the very first episode of Miami Vice.
I don't think he directed it.
He didn't?
Mm-mm.
No?
No. Well, it's really good.
Who did that?
If he did direct it, I would put it right below The Insider on my list of Mann films.
Nice. Yeah, it is really good. I like that pilot a lot.
Too bad the rest of the show kind of goes off after that.
Good old
I think.
Phil Collins.
If any of you ever die, I'm gonna rent a convertible and drive around Miami.
Yeah,
with the top down at night, listening to that song.
It's directed by Thomas Carter, apparently. Whoever that is.
Googling portion.
John Carter's brother.
Yep.
The fictional character
John
Carter,
his brother. Yeah,
from Mars.
No, Jimmy
he's Jay-Z's brother, Sean Carter's brother.
Oh yeah, his much older brother.
They, sh- They should make a movie called The Carter Brothers, starring John Carter and Sean Carter fighting aliens on Mars.
Oh, he also did.
Sometimes Jimmy Carter shows up and
and builds a house for the poor people on Mars.
Oh my God! So he also did Save the Last Dance.
Nice.
Okay.
But he also did Gifted Hands, the Ben Carson story.
What?
So he might just be a director for hire.
A television drama film starring Cuba Gooding Jr. about based on the life of story of neurosurgeon Ben Carson from 1961 to 1987.
Well, 1987.
I mean, I guess back then.
He did some cool stuff back in the day. It's unfortunate.
Some cool surgical stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And, like, I don't know, donated to a lot of, like, Ohio charities and whatnot.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, probably worth making a movie about.
Yeah.
Still thinks the pyramids are full of grain.
Yeah, I mean, you know.
Wonder what he would have to say about Egypt's fight against British oppression.
And now we get live to our guest host, Ben Carson, to talk about his thoughts on Too Early, Too Late.
Sorry about that 9% in Iowa, Ben.
I don't think the Egyptians were oppressed. Oh, brother.
So,
yep.
Glad we ended here.
New Republican candidates, we're taking it to you.
Oh man,
you can't handle this much shade.
Ever since I learned what it was, the terminology "throwing shade" is one of my favorite things in the world.
Would Do you listen say to that podcast?
What?
Do you listen to that podcast, the Throwing Shade podcast?
Oh no, I learned it from Paris is Burning.
Oh, I know. I just meant like since you love the phrase so much, maybe you should listen to that.
No,
podcast.
No, I haven't listened to that.
Maybe
podcast.
You should marry it.
Maybe I should.
Would you say that learning what throwing shade means was lit for you? Was it lit?
Maybe. Depends on which definition of lit we're talking about.
This podcast is lit.
We are lit, yeah.
We're our own worst enemy.
Are we, are we drunk?
Yeah. Who?
Yeah.
Are we that band from the 90s?
Why are we in the front line?
Yep.
With our clothes on.
Man, I was thinking, like, if there isn't a podcast called Throwing Shade, we should definitely do a podcast called Throwing Shade. Make it like a one of our sub podcasts.
Where we're just taking off.
According to the rest of the podcast world, it doesn't matter if there's already one called that. You can just make your own comment. You can make two or three more podcasts called Throwing Shade.
That's Except right. They're actually very popular and could probably afford a lawyer to give us a cease and desist notice.
Yeah.
They came to Portland and sold out like a theater doing a live episode like pretty recently.
We're probably really popular, it's just no one has told us.
That's true.
I mean, cease and desist is just
like sell out a theater doing a live episode. I bet a lot of people would pay $20 to $30 to come watch us record.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, cease and desist is like a really extreme form of throwing shade if you're
That's true.
We'd be throwing shade and throwing shade.
It's legal shade.
Legal shade.
The harshest sort of shade.
Well, I know. I would go with economic shade as the harshest sort of shade. Like, you take people's money away.
That's true.
It's true.
Well, I don't know. Bullet shade is pretty harsh.
Bullet shade.
Murdering people with bullets. I don't know. So I don't know if my metaphor works, actually.
I think we've stretched it about as far as it goes.
Yeah. Although I bet literally throwing bullets at a person would still hurt really bad.
Yeah.
I guess I wouldn't do that much.
Right. Especially if you hit them in the eye, that would hurt.
Yeah. Or the head in general. I don't know. They're pretty heavy metal.
Oh. heavy metal.
Oh, yeah. That's what this movie could have used. Some Black Sabbath.
Some more guns and heavy metal.
With the... When the train appeared in that shot, it should have played Crazy Train.
Oliver!
If my computer worked, I would have to edit that and put it on YouTube.
When did that album even come out? Was it doing
it? No, I don't think it was out yet. It might have been, actually, but it would be like the same year.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was like, when did that album come out? When did Blizzard of Oz come out?
It's like 81, 82, 83, one of those years.
It could have legitimately been in this movie, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, we are still recording, still. Yes. Definitely are.
If only these French avant-garde directors had, you know, had connections to Ozzy Osbourne, could have made that a reality. Alas.
September 20th, 1980.
Oh, cool. Plenty of time.
Yeah. This could have happened. Why did this not happen? Great mysteries of our time.
Definitely should make a montage of this movie to Crazy Train by Black Sabbath. I think that would work.
By we, you mean me, right?
Yeah.
Has anyone else made any videos?
That is exactly the we I'm referring to. Yes.
I'm gonna point out that Crazy Train is just Ozzy on his own. Although, not actually Black Sabbath.
Oh yeah, well, you would.
Although it's the same guitarist too, right? I think didn't he leave the band too?
Tony Iommi.
I'm not sure. I have to check that. I'd have to see. Not certain on that.
Very fair.
I would like to get a better computer, though, so I can actually also edit some stuff. That would be.
I would like to get a really nice. Good computer there. Working again. It makes me sad that it's been like months without it. My setup is very depressing. It's got my tiny laptop sitting in front of my beautiful big monitor on my desk. All right. I feel like we should wrap this up.
Based on watching Michael Mann movies recently, my only suggestion is you become a professional thief.
It's true.
Then you'll have enough money to get a new computer, but also probably get killed.
Yep.
Or have to kill a bunch of other people.
a la Seven Psychopaths, maybe, because I live in a pretty rich part of Portland, I should start just kidnapping rich people's dogs and returning them for the reward. Seems like a good racket. I haven't seen the movie, but I bet everything went fine for those guys.
It did in that episode of Veronica Mars.
Oh, that's right.
Just wanted to say, since we brought it up, that I do have a new video, Best of 2014, that you can watch on Vimeo at the Loose Cannons account or on our website, correct? I haven't checked. It's up there, right?
I haven't put it up yet, but I will. I should have just said yes, because I was planning to do that as soon as we're done recording. Way before this airs, but...
Just,
okay.
Yeah.
So it's
yes.
Yes.
Just stick to the facts, Basil.
And, it's okay. I think I said that the 2015 one would be up kind of soon, but I checked on some things, and... if I want to be able to use more than the trailers for most of the movie, I'm going to have to wait a little while. So I would have liked it to come out. Well, I would have liked it to come out in December, you know. But there's nothing that I can do about it, since I'm not a professional reviewer and therefore don't get, like, copies of the film.
No screeners.
Yeah.
Right.
So... So I think I'm going to wait until April to do it, because I think pretty much everything that will come out will be out by then. The thoughts that we once had is just probably not going to be in this one.
Yeah. I mean, I could tell you some movies that are in it, and you could just pull from that, since it's 100% archival of
that's right.
other movies.
It's just other movies.
Great. Yeah.
But...
I was thinking I would just, during the countdown part, put footage not found.
Nice. Do that grindhouse scene missing thing.
Yeah. So, thanks for listening and checking out our content. I hope you're enjoying it. If you are, you can subscribe to us using your podcast listening application. And hey, you can share our video content to all your social media networks. I feel like if and you're wanting to help us out, it's more likely that people will watch a 20-minute video and then listen to an hour podcast based on it than they'll listen to an hour podcast at first. So.
And then listen to a 5-hour podcast.
Oh, yeah. It's those videos are the marijuana of Loose Cannon's content, because it's a gateway drug to the, our much stronger stuff.
The ketamine that is our end of the year.
I'm really in a podcast hole, man. I've been listening for 12 hours straight. How many podcasts is that? It's only the third. So yeah, spread the word, my good people, and give us that 5-star rating and review, and until then, we will see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye.